Good evening. Welcome to the September 17th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for your participation. We'll begin with introductions. Do you want to start on the right?
Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
And Stacy Smith, representing South Kitsap.
Good evening. I'm Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
I'm Alan Beam from Central Kitsap. Now on the from the screen, Zoom.
I'm Stephen Bow from Central Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Little discussion of the protocols for the evening. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If attending in person, please refrain from conversations other than with other attendees or staff. If you wish to provide general public comment or testify during the public hearing, we have four methods to participate. First, for virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise hand button on the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Call-in attendees can signal by pressing 9 on their keypad. The last four digits of your phone number will be called, and you will be connected. You may need to dial 6 to unmute your phone. Written comments, testimony can be submitted to the staff or emailed to awatson@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date and time of the meeting that the comments are meant for, your name, agenda item, and the subject that you're addressing. The submitted comments will be entered into the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name and general area in which you live. Comments are normally limited to 2 minutes for general public comments and 3 minutes for public hearings. These times are adjustable by the chair. Now we go to the adoption of the agenda. Does anybody have any recommended changes to the agenda?
No, I move that we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor? Unanimous. Next, we have the adoption of the minutes. We have four sets of minutes to adopt. First set of minutes is the minutes from May 21, 2024. Do I have any comments? Any proposed revisions? Hearing none, those minutes will be accepted. Next one is 7:10.
So, Alan, what we'll want to do is to state if there are no objections, the minutes will be adopted as presented and then pause and wait, unless someone wants to motion.
Yes, ma'am. Way, so. If there are no objections, we will adopt the minutes of 5:21. Perfect. Next meeting agenda is 7:02, July 2nd. Do I have any proposed comments or revisions to the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes as written for July 2nd will be accepted. The next set of minutes is for August 20. Are there any comments, proposed revisions? Hearing none, the minutes for August 20 will be accepted. The final one is for September 3rd. Do I have any comments or revisions for September 3rd? Hearing none, the minutes from 9:03 will be accepted. That brings us to our first general comments period from the public. Do we have any comments?
I do not see any hands raised online, and I don't have anyone in the room. So.
Hearing no comments, we'll close the first public hearing testimony section. The next portion is the work study for the 2024 Comprehensive Plan Update.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Eric Baker. I'm with the Kitsap County Commissioner's Office. This is, I think, the third work study that we've had since the release of the documents. Well, actually, since the release of the documents on August 30th. The important part for me is to make sure that the Planning Commission feels properly briefed. Obviously, the documents that we have are very large, about 800 pages in all. I was going to say 800 pounds, but it only feels that way. And to make sure that if there's particular pieces of information that would be valuable as you move into the public testimony portion, that I can provide that or have it available, if not before the planning, before the hearing, but before the deliberations, which are scheduled to happen on October 1st. I wasn't planning on talking for 2 hours like I pretty much did the last time I was with you. So you're welcome. But in general, I do want to start out with, are there general questions that the Planning Commission has that we haven't really covered? Obviously, you've heard a lot of the same words out of me. Are there different words that you would like to hear?
Eric, one of the things we don't receive many comments on, it, or at least haven't in the past, and I haven't seen much on, is the capital facilities plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you think we're going to be hearing a lot of testimony on the capital facilities part of this or not, and it'd be helpful to me to make sure that we do our extra homework and focus on some of those things you might expect us to hear from the public.
Excellent. Let me start with the capital facilities plan then. The capital facilities plan is broken into two main sections, the first of which is planning for the next 6 years of growth. That is called the six-year plan, surprisingly. And then we have the 20-year estimates. We're doing a 20-year plan, so we do need to have general estimates on what kind of roadway system we're going to need, is there enough water, is there how are we going to get sewer plant capacity and sewer infrastructure to homes. The six-year plan, it needs to have designated funding sources. So you're going to note that some of those are substantially more granular when it comes to how we're going to pay for things between what will likely be 2025 to 2030. And then beyond 2030, it will be more planning level estimates. As we have discovered over the course of the last several years that we can't tell exactly how high estimated costs go, funding sources, et cetera. So, again, it's kind of the 6 years. Most comment has been related around transportation, concerned about traffic, concerned about how that might affect congestion in Silverdale or congestion in general. Also, concerns about adequate water quantity. The water quantity in particular is in the urban areas. Obviously, let me start with transportation. We do have a laundry list of transportation projects as well as transportation costs that would potentially come along with the 20-year horizon. The important part for that is that transit is expected to be a key component to addressing transportation needs in Silverdale. I have a little bit of the presentation that kind of talks about what some of those may look like. There is no way to pave our way out of the growth that is coming to Kitsap County. We don't want to create five-lane roads everywhere. We are looking at providing different opportunities, walking, biking, and transit. Transit is incredibly important. But you will note in the capital facilities plan and in the environmental impact statement, there are a number of rural roadways that are impacted and will require a certain amount of improvement. When we're talking about the difference between rural and urban transportation infrastructure, You'll hear a lot of folks indicating that we want sidewalks and bike lanes on places like Central Valley Road, on Big Valley Road. Urban areas are the places where bike lanes and sidewalks are to be encouraged, if not outright mandated in a lot of examples. However, when you go out to the rural areas, at that point, sidewalks are actually not supposed to be an element, unless you're in a limited area, more intensive rural development like Manchester, Keyport, or Suquamish. And bike lanes really are not there as well. What you do is you get expanded shoulders. So when you're looking through the project list in the transportation section, what you're going to note is you're going to note a lot of lane improvements and shoulder improvements, Central Valley Road, Anderson Hill Road, located out through there as we address what is less but still growth in our rural areas coming into our urban areas. We're hoping that we are bending the trend with this current plan. Again, we are not expanding urban growth areas very much. So like I think I've mentioned in the past, developers are going to be looking at a lot of the same land they've been looking at over the last 30 or 40 years and have elected not to develop. That hopefully will provide a more compact development pattern. We'll make one of the key components to getting infrastructure in areas is redevelopment. People think that, well, local state dollars will build all the sidewalks and they'll build all the bike lanes. And no, honestly, it is the redevelopment of areas that were developed at a previous standard back in the 60s and 70s that now would have to be brought up to today's standards. And for better or worse, in Kitsap County, sidewalks were not a big component of residential development in the 60s and 70s, 80s, 90s. So as these start to redevelop, you're going to see more of those improvements. So when we're talking about how a transportation infrastructure is going to occur, it is going to come through state and federal grants for our major arterials and some of our collectors. Improvements around schools are also going to come. Safe Routes to Schools is a funding program that, again, comes from the state and federal government to provide funding. There is the Kitsap County Road Fund, which is our local property tax dollars that come in. And then there is that redevelopment component, where as development comes in, we develop plans that indicate there's a bike lane on this roadway, there's a sidewalk on this roadway, and development is required to put in the frontage improvements as they go. Historically, we've had those conversations about why am I putting in the sidewalk? It's a sidewalk to nowhere. Well, every sidewalk is a sidewalk to nowhere until the first one's in. So it is one of those that we need to be advocating strongly for and requiring where necessary. When it comes to water resources, that is slightly different because we don't provide that service. We aren't a water purveyor. We don't have water infrastructure. And largely when it comes to water capacity, it is the Department of Ecology that provides water rights to our various municipal water providers, like Silverdale Water, North Perry Water, West Sound Utility District. Those would be some examples. And, of course, PUD. That is our largest water. From our analysis, we have significantly adequate water, but along with most questions we have on a aquifer-driven system, it is where that water is located. We have adequate water rights, especially in the Seebeck area, but where are we not promoting development in the Seebeck area? So there is a discussion about how those water rights would be, they kind of call it water wheeling, where they bring it from Seebeck to other parts of the community. Some would go as far as Kingston. The Consolidated Water Systems Plan, everybody takes a look and says, well, that document's from 2005. Well, that was the foundational document. And every time a water system has to have its plan certified, thus approved by the Department of Ecology, it has to come to us to ensure that it is meeting the growth targets. We do that for all the municipal water providers, not necessarily some of the folks in the rural areas. I'm largely talking about urban property owners. So our development inside our urban growth areas from our capital facilities plan shows adequate water supply. It is how that water is going to get to the various properties that will be the question, and it likely will involve pulling water from one area and bringing it to another area. That is a point of sensitivity for the tribes and some environmental groups, as it is pulling water out of one area and then discharging it elsewhere. Obviously, any area that is on sewer, the water is not going to be infiltrating back into the ground. When you flush your toilet, eventually it is going out to the Sound. It's heavily treated, Class A water, perfectly fine for discharge, but you are, to a degree, beginning to disturb the natural water system when you do that. That is a lot of that regulation is the Department of Ecology, so we have to be very careful in our comprehensive plan not to be brought into another agency's wheelhouse and what they are responsible for handling. It's similar to we have a number of tribes in Kitsap County. There's tribal treaty rights. There's conversations between those. The county doesn't have a role in discussing whose treaty rights are whose. Same to a degree when it comes to water provision. That's pretty much the big ticket items when it comes to the capital facilities plan, except for parks. The Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan is currently under development. A draft should be out here shortly. That will propose a series of parks-related improvements that are necessary over time. Those would be incorporated into our capital facilities plan in December. I don't have those right now, unfortunately. What we do have is a very close approximation of what that draft will hold, but I will say that very likely it will be different than what you see in the plan today as the Parks, Recreation, Open Space Plan moves closer to adoption, but that will be after the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is due in December. The Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan very likely will not conclude until March of 2025. Thus, you probably will not be seeing it until January, coming before the Planning Commission, if the Parks, Recreation, Open Space Plan is a stop on its way.
What about purple pipes?
Purple pipes are included, but they are not at a necessary level of service standard. But when you're talking about water rights, purple pipes are a key component, as anyone who's ever applied for a water right is probably still waiting. It can take 15, 20 years to get a water right. So it is more and more important to the municipal water providers to be utilizing the water that we currently have in the system. And that's where Kitsap County does have a role, which is with our wastewater treatment plants, the one in Central Kitsap in particular, and its connection with the Silverdale Water District. We are looking to install purple pipe, which would allow for reused water, so water that has been turned on, brought from a well, flushed, and then sent to a sewer plant, and then treated, and then brought back for purposes like irrigation. We're not talking about toilet to tap, which I think was a very unfortunate San Diego motto there for a while. It's like, that's not the way to roll out reused water. So it would go into irrigation. And, of course, we're going to be having a good amount of landscaping. We have the schools have parks and fields that still need to be watered, though a number of those are starting to transition to field turf, which means that the water need is less. But, yes, that purple pipe will be a key component as, again, water rights are very hard to come by. While we have enough water rights right now, the possibility of getting more is very limited. So I would expect more water providers to be talking to their wastewater providers. The West Sound Utility District actually is both. They have both water and sewer infrastructure, so they are going to be able to coordinate better on this in the south end of the county for areas like Port Orchard and the East Port Orchard Urban Growth Area. That answer your question, or do I just go all around the outside of it?
Thank you.
So I had a question. In talking with South Kitsap residents in general, a lot of their comments are around the development and comprehensive plans that are happening within the city jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And so I always have to kind of think about, how is our county working in cooperation with the other DCD plans, mm-hmm, in our cities? I think our public should probably hear some of that, or we should be prepared for some of, mm-hmm, those comments at,
yes,
the public hearing.
Obviously, in the South Kitsap area, there are a few what I call flashpoints when it comes to traffic in particular. That section around Lowe's, the Sydney, not Sydney Sedgwick, but Sydney, Sydney Sedgwick, the Sydney Sedgwick intersection with large amounts of multifamily housing that are going in, and then all the people who are coming in through the back way out of McCormick Woods are all landing in that one spot. The city of Port Orchard is working on a better improvements to that area. Again, there's also going to be a transit station, or a transfer station that is proposed, located right on that corner. Kitsap County works with our other planning directors. I will say that the cities are slightly behind us in our comprehensive planning. However, we have been coordinating closely. If you note, in the West Bremerton urban growth area, there are some expansions that are directly requested by the city of Bremerton as part of their growth, annexation, and water quality goals. But yes, it is one of those scenarios where the city jurisdictions aren't responsible to follow county code, and the county is not responsible to follow city code. We coordinate to the best of our abilities, but we have different elected officials who make decisions for their own jurisdictions. Ultimately, when projects come in for approval, both jurisdictions have the opportunity to comment, especially as it applies to transportation infrastructure, and indicate that we believe that additional work needs to be done. I will say that I'm not absolutely connected to the proposed resolution for the Sydney Sedgwick intersection. The city of Port Orchard is someone I can follow up with to get more information coming up for the public hearing. But ultimately, the situation on that is we strongly recommend, while a lot of folks focus heavily on the county's comprehensive plan, the city's comprehensive plans are equally, if not more, important, as we are only part of the urban areas. We can potentially be successful in Silverdale and East Port Orchard, but if the cities are not, we're not going to meet our growth targets. All right. Well, with that as a precursor, I'm just going to run through a few slides. Again, just going to hit on some minor highlights. Well, I won't call them highlights. Things we haven't talked about in the last year that are part of the comprehensive plan and are somewhat important. The documents that were released, again, are fourfold. There are three. The capital facilities plan, which should not have a hyphen in between capital and facilities. I must fix that. The comprehensive plan, the capital facilities plan, and the development regulations are what we are currently taking public comment on and have the ability to amend between now and the time the documents are approved in December. The final environmental impact statement, people are still able to provide comment, but we will not be making changes to it at this time unless a substantial change is made to the urban growth areas, densities, heights, which indicate that the final environmental impact statement is no longer accurate. So you will be seeing a lot of testimony predominantly, I believe, on the comprehensive plan, the zoning maps. I believe a number of folks are going to be coming back asking again to get inside the urban growth area boundaries, and then also the development regulations, probably largely located around tree retention. If you remember that briefing a few weeks back, we talked about tree retention being something that is required outside of critical area buffers, can include critical area buffers, but oftentimes for development that could mean retaining trees or planting additional trees where you would not have otherwise, which could potentially impact development potential. I've already talked about the three main things that we're talking about that is particularly important in this comprehensive plan is to ensure that we are increasing housing diversity, we're beginning to address climate change and resiliency, and that we are truly focusing in earnest on vital regional and countywide centers. When we talk about Silverdale redeveloping, that is what that means. We need to make these places walkable. People need to be able to work, live, and play all in the same area without necessarily having to get in their car every time to do it. There are some other policy changes that are in here that I will spend a little bit of time on that I haven't really talked about. We have talked about the term expedited permitting review. With all the efforts that are going through the Department of Community Development right now regarding improving permit processing as a whole, to the point where what we are really talking about instead of the word expediting, which usually can mean different things to different people, which is I go to the top of the stack. We are talking about improved permit processing in our centers and a lot of the other areas of Kitsap County. So in general, permits are going to be going out faster. We are going to be looking at hitting very specific targets. Those targets are very similar to what we had set up for expedited permitting. So there was a recent legislation that requires us to hit certain timelines. So ultimately, that is caused the Department of Community Development to focus heavily on necessary staffing and necessary permit review that is at a level that can get permits out the door faster. The CPACER program I'll talk about here in a moment. We've talked a lot about climate change as it applies to our natural environment. The CPACER program applies to our built environment. It is not a regulation. It's actually an incentive. I'll talk about that in a moment. And then we do have boundary line adjustment criteria in the comprehensive plan development regulations. Basically, what you'll see there is largely just what's required by state statute. We're the only jurisdiction that does not have a boundary line adjustment process in Kitsap, and very few don't have anything at all. We are largely silent. What a boundary line adjustment is two people who want to move their property line, or it could be someone who owns 10 to 12 lots and wants to take 10 to 12 one-acre lots and then move them all around and put them into a smaller area of half-acre lots. We don't have any regulations about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It happens a lot in the rural areas. So you do see some proposals that are, again, according to DCD staff, are the minimums that are required to meet just general state statute on boundary line adjustments. It's also important because what we find is we have a number of people who will purchase a property that has had a boundary line adjustment. That boundary line adjustment has created a non-legal developable lot. And then the person who who's purchased the property is stuck with an unbuildable lot, which they will not find out until they come down to the county to get a building permit, in which case then we say, no, you cannot. This is the first step in trying to address that issue. The Board of County Commissioners is very interested in the auditor, assessor, and Department of Community Development to work more collaboratively with the health district, because before you ever get to the county, you've gone to the health district to get your, what they call your BSA, your building site application, there we go, which says, okay, here's how you're going to get water, here's how you're going to get wastewater, either sewer or septic. So you've paid that money, you've waited that time, you bring that to the county, and at that point you find out you may not have a developable lot. Boundary line adjustments are oftentimes one of the ways that that occurs. And we are trying to find a way to get our arms around it. I'm going to pause there. I will talk more about the CPACER program, but any questions about the improved permit processing or boundary line adjustment criteria? There's a lot of words on this. The CPACER program actually is a certification program that the Department of Community Development, someone would apply to the county to get certified as a pretty much green building. What this would allow is this will allow developers to go to a bank and get a lower interest rate, which can be the difference between a project penciling and not penciling. Pierce County and Jefferson County have this program in place right now. It is strongly advocated by Kitsap Bank and Kitsap Credit Union, a number of our local institutions, as well as all around. What this basically means is that if you are building a multifamily or other construction, and you're using certain, or you're meeting certain goals. What you see here is reduction or consumption of energy or fossil fuels, supporting on-site production of clean, renewable energy, reducing or supporting reductions in water consumption, and then you have less of an issue for us, reducing or limiting lead in our water supply. Not really a big situation for us. Or increasing or improving resiliency through seismic retrofits, energy storage systems, or improvements for flood mitigation. So it really is kind of green building resilience incentives, not regulation. We're not telling people they have to do this, but we are creating an ordinance that will allow people to come for a fee and get certified. You know, I say fee because ultimately it has to be processed by the Department of Community Development and they have to recapture their costs. And exchange with that certification, they can go to their bank and get a lower interest loan. The CPACER program does not just apply to unincorporated Kitsap County. It would apply to the entirety of Kitsap County, Bremerton, Polesville, Port Orchard, and Bainbridge Island as well. So that is an important component that will hopefully help us meet our greenhouse gas emissions in the built environment, so it isn't just about retaining trees. It's about retaining trees and ensuring that what gets built addressing issues with water, air, and other quality. That's just more information on that. Silverdale redevelopment, we've talked a
Eric,
lot.
Before,
oh, yeah.
Sorry. If you don't mind.
Oh, please. I apologize for going too fast.
That's okay. Why the differentiation between what is nationally accepted, something like LEED?
This is actually goes beneath LEED to a particular degree. This is kind of an intermediary step in between the two. There's a lot of overlap between LEED and CPACER, but this allows for lesser degrees of energy efficiency, et cetera, to be able to apply for these types of funds. So in general, it's a separate set of criteria that doesn't necessarily follow LEED standards for the host of reasons that oftentimes that can create. To meet LEED, you are moving to a different price point in your construction.
Is that to say or argue that this does not create an additional expense to the bill?
This will increase. This can increase the expense to the build, but that is substantially overcome by the savings in carrying costs of the land from the lower interest rate.
Okay. Would we be able to see Katie's study? It sounds like you're aware of some.
Can you get a copy of what?
Case study. Examples where the expense to the building is offset more than by the loan that is able to be acquired?
Let me reach out and see what I can find from the folks who have been applying this or our local banking institutions who may have specific examples of projects that have happened in the region that could be valuable.
Yeah, because in the interest of, you know, getting the industry on board, mm-hmm. they want to see it in a pro forma.
Yeah, the industry has definitely been pushing for this. The banking industry and some multifamily developers have been asking for this since 2023. I've told them they have to wait till the comprehensive plan because we're not doing any new. But, yeah, let me see what I can dig up in regards to a couple examples.
Thank you.
Yes?
Real quick on that point, Eric, again, it sounds like a great program, but what about staffing? We can't keep staff now. How many staffers are we talking about working through the certification process?
Very few. In general, the Pierce County's had it for some time, and they get about 4 or 5 applications. The certification is more a checkbox exercise. It isn't a subjective determination. It is, they have to provide their checklist of here's the amenities. If you look at the code, you'll note what are eligible improvements, what are eligible costs. They will then show that this is what is within our construction, check. The department signs off, and then that document is taken off to the bank for the lower interest rate. So it's a ministerial decision. Trust me, that has been one of the conversations that I started at the beginning with this. As much like all the new, like where I think someone mentioned the short-term vacation rental code earlier, and it's like, yes, we need to get our arms around short-term vacation rentals, but the question is going to be, how are we going to process those, and what will that impact be? So, yeah, we're always looking at what the impact on permit processing is going to be and whether it requires additional staffing before we implement new codes. Other questions on the CPACER program? Kind of talked about Silverdale redevelopment to a degree, but the Silverdale Regional Center's plan that you see in the document has some additional information. We will be working further on the Silverdale Regional Center in 2025. We do have a consultant that's coming on board to do a market study and propose other potential changes to be able to, again, kind of make this area more walkable over time. I'll cover some of the things that are in the current Silverdale Regional Center plan. Again, we are focusing on multifamily development. Mixed use is encouraged but not required. We would like to see people living in the downtown area, not just shopping or working. This is particularly important around the hospital, where senior housing could be an excellent amenity for people who are looking to age in place. They don't want to leave the Kitsap County community, but they don't really have options. There's definitely higher densities allowed in the Silverdale area, as well as additional heights. That is for apartments and condominiums predominantly, but also for row housing. So again, when you're looking at our single family zones, you're going to note that we're allowing up to 14 dwelling units an acre for attached housing. So allowing people to develop fourplexes where there might have been a single home at one point or another. That is a particular point of conversation in a lot of communities. A lot of single family developments perceive themselves as single family only. And seeing additional development come in can create additional traffic. It can create some additional issues. We are working on exactly how to provide that kind of compatibility, but I will say that from recent state requirements, there does need to be a greater diversity of housing outside of just our single family detached, even in half acre or one-third acre communities in our urban growth areas. I say that for everyone in the public because I want to make sure that no one feels I'm hiding that with all my talk of downtown Silverdale and downtown Kingston. Yes, sir.
I saw that the Central Kitsap Community Council had a presentation on a new Silverdale Center, a new area. And I didn't see anything like a new kind of park or center area in the plan. Is it something going on separately?
That is something that will be part of the 2025 conversation. It kind of comes down to, obviously, the main green space in Silverdale is the Clear Creek Trail. We are working with the Great Peninsula Conservancy on creating a better maintenance strategy for that park system. Obviously, that park system and trail connectivity runs all the way through Old Mill Park, which is a certain amount of green space, and then down to Silverdale Waterfront Park. There definitely is an interest in creating kind of a town center. I have to say the mall kind of feels like the area where that might be located. That being said, we don't necessarily control the mall. I do have expectation that those kind of conversations are going to be had, but when it comes to Silverdale and our level of planning, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we are not going to be the long-term jurisdiction. This area will incorporate over time, and they will probably want to have control over exactly where is their city hall, where is their city community center, versus having these types of things dictated to them by the previous owner. So we do need to make sure that we are establishing fertile climate for this type, but we don't want to go too far and create obligations or spend substantial amounts of money on something that is not going to be the will of the people of a city of Silverdale. It's a dance that we have to do.
How do you go about coordinating that dance?
The
choreography. How do you say, this is what we want, and mm-hmm. when the developers come in, how does that fit into the plan? And is anybody looking at the plan mm-hmm. when they approve a development?
The important part is to establish exactly what that plan is. I'll move on to kind of the next slide. I'll move on to a couple slides down. It is establishing proposed opportunities for walkability and bikeability. So as redevelopment occurs, the redevelopment has to take into account pedestrian and bicycle opportunities. What you see here on this slide is our attempts to break up super blocks. If you're trying to walk in Silverdale, if you want to go east-west, you got to walk over a quarter mile before you get to between Mickleberry and Myrie. For folks who are able-bodied, that's not necessarily a problem. For seniors, for people who are differently abled, that is not a walkable community. Plus, you're also walking along Silverdale Way with some folks who can be traveling at some relatively high speeds. So the important part of the planning is to establish ideas as to what this could ultimately end up looking like. Basically, what that is pedestrian bicycle facilities that are off of main roadways. One of the key components of that may be an eventual non-motorized pedestrian and bicycle-only crossing of Clear Creek, so folks can get from one side to the other without having to go down Ridgetop or Buckland Hill Road. Buckland Hill Road has bike lanes, which is great, but it is not necessarily comfortable for a family to necessarily want to take their family on. to your question, it is a important conversation with the owners of the property. We've talked to the developers, we've talked to the community, we've talked to the environmentalists of what they want to see. But the people who are really who drive what Silverdale will become is the people who are currently cashing checks on the property today. There's not a lot of blight in Silverdale. There's no block of boarded up buildings. What we have is we have people who are, again, making a profit, generally, who will be asked, okay, what can we do to make you, when you redevelop this property? Because ultimately, with a lot of the development in Silverdale, it's reaching that point where you either have to reinvest to improve or B, start over. If you miss that redevelopment period for a building, you're waiting another 10 to 15 years because they are amortizing the cost of whatever improvement they're doing. So we need to have some of these plans in place and work with the individual developers on exactly what could work for them to get them to think about multifamily housing in places they have not already. Some of that, again, is increasing heights, reducing the required land use review for certain types of housing within the regional center. Because ultimately what all the developers and the owners will tell us over and over again, you can talk about reducing fees, you can talk about changing code, but ultimately it is the time it takes to get from the time they purchase the property and pay or start paying on it to the time they're generating revenue from it. The shorter that the county can make that, the more affordable a project will be. So it is working closely with not just the developers in the community, which we have spent decades kind of doing. It is talking to the people who own the property. Many of those folks are not in Kitsap County, and that likely will not change over time. We have a strong local building community, though a vast majority of them are single-family developers. Multifamily development is particularly complicated for a number of reasons. A, it has additional construction challenges and construction expenses. It has parking requirements. But the one thing that we really don't talk about that much is it requires a significant amount of investment from the banking industry. And the banking industry tends to look at multifamily as a potential high-risk investment. So generally, if you were going to build multifamily, you have to, A, have experience with multifamily development, B, sitting on a relatively large pile of money. So we have developers around here who have a certain amount of money and capital and access, but they don't have the track record on multifamily, which tends to make banks uncomfortable. So that being said, the reason I say all that is that while there's going to be opportunities for local developers to help Silverdale, I would expect that a good number of regional or national developers are going to be looking at places like Silverdale for redevelopment. People who have a long track record with multifamily housing and are able to obtain that capital. I just want to say that to be transparent, that very likely we're going to be seeing developers in Kitsap we may not have seen in the past.
Who in DCD is going to do that?
It's going to be reviewing the plans and documents?
No, oh. It's got the big picture and does this fancy talking.
The Department of Community Development has as part of their 2025 work plan to be engaging the community, including the property owners. We are bringing on consultant services as well that is strictly focused on these types of challenges. The important part for this is we are going to have to, again, do the balance between thinking aspirationally versus what there is, the general idea that Silverdale is never going to change. This is how Silverdale will always be. We need to find the place in between what it is today and what we really, really wish it would be, and provide that framework planning that can help developers start to think differently about their property while not getting over our skis and starting to plan as a city when we're not a city. And you ask, well, why can't you do that? It's like, well, certain investments require bonding. The moment we have to take out a bond, we're expecting revenue to be coming back to pay off those bonds. If Silverdale were to incorporate, a good amount of that revenue goes away, but they don't have to take the bond.
But is this a Colin Plouffe? Is this a Kathleen Barnhart? Who's in the DCD is going to have this wonderful job?
It will be Colin, it will be Kathleen. Heather has joined the team. She has a lot of experience in Wisconsin. You have Jim Rogers. You have Scott Diener. There, and again, you will have a consultant team that has a lot of experience in dealing with these types of issues in places like Bothell, places like University Place. Note, I'm not saying the city of Seattle, because those examples don't necessarily fly particularly well outside the city of Seattle, if you like the model. Transit. We have been working very closely with Kitsap Transit. What you see here is some potential transit plans for Silverdale moving forward. What you'll note here is that we are creating regular circulation patterns that will be going throughout the Silverdale area on a regular basis. We also will have the community routes. You can barely see it here on the image, but there is some pink that's located there from the transfer station. That is the community route that runs down to Bremerton. There would also be one that would run up to Poulsbo and beyond. But what you're noting here is we are connecting activity centers. You have connections to the transit center, to the park and ride lot. Also, you're hitting the major stops along the way, the hospital, the school campus, the multifamily complexes along Randall, and then the mall, which hopefully will be something more in the future, even with their parking lots or revision of their existing buildings. Again, when I talk about redevelopment, I'm not talking about bulldozing all the existing uses. I'm just looking at them potentially utilizing some of that unused parking space for something more than RV sales or RV sales or the occasional fireworks stand.
Where's the ferry?
The potential ferry from Silverdale to Bremerton. That is part of the comprehensive plan and is looking to leave out of the port facilities located in Old Town. That is why it'll be important for us to have, again, biking and other avenues on Bayshore, which, of course, you see is some of the elements of Bayshore right now. We are not looking at potential significant redevelopment of Old Town itself, but we want to provide connectivity between those marine facilities so that, especially if the Navy is to come and to do all the construction located at the PSNS, that there is a way for people in Silverdale to, or people working at that facility to live in Silverdale and get to that construction project. That is going to be a multi-year. But much like when Trident was established, we need to be able to leverage those investments in military facilities to provide long-term benefits to Kitsap County as a whole, and a commuter ferry to and from, improvements to the Port of Silverdale's dock, and access at the city of Bremerton could be one of those long-term benefits that get people off of SR3 and not necessarily have to address the Gorst issue. You'll note a lot of conversations about equity and access. We have gone through and we have looked at the racial demographics as well as ethnic demographics of Kitsap County. Anyone who's lived here for a certain amount of time acknowledges that we have been historically Caucasian. Actually, at one point, we were running 80-85% Caucasian countywide. I only show this slide because we are becoming more racially and ethnically diverse. Since 2010 to 2022, we've decreased on the Caucasian. No, we haven't decreased the amount of the Caucasian population has moved down from almost 80% countywide to 75%, with growth in our Hispanic, African American, and Asian communities. We do expect that that is going to continue over time. Unlike other parts of the Puget Sound, where a lot of the racial demographics are located in geographic areas, particular neighborhoods, international district, etc., we don't have that in Kitsap County. We have our demographics spread pretty equally across all our urban areas. There's a little more in Silverdale, but generally, you don't see any census tracts that have less than 65% 62% Caucasian. So when we're talking about breaking down barriers for racial and ethnic groups, we really are talking more holistically about how we're handling the entirety of our urban growth area boundaries. How are we making housing cheaper for all our urban areas, not necessarily talking about how do we get a bus to this neighborhood from that neighborhood, because that neighborhood has been substantially disproportionately impacted by decisions made over time. We have that more holistically across all our urban growth areas, maybe a little less on the shorelines, as those properties are substantially more expensive, but definitely when we're talking about areas like Cariotis, McWilliams, Fairgrounds, East Port Orchard area, Parkwood, those are all areas that we need to be making sure that we are taking equal efforts to improve access to housing, access to employment, as we're going through our plans. You may have read this throughout the comprehensive plan, but you haven't seen me talk too much about it, largely because of that demographic focus versus geographic focus of our efforts. It's a lot easier to say, hey, here's all the stuff we're doing for this community right here. However, we really do need to think more holistically here in Kitsap County, because obviously the goal is not to have racial communities living only in one place or predominantly in one place. It is to spread them throughout the community to ensure that we have, again, a very diverse, all our neighborhoods are diverse, not just one neighborhood. So it is in many ways a good problem to have. Anyone want to talk about land capacity? I haven't really talked about it. It's the math problem that goes along with all the population, employment, and housing discussions. I won't go into a lot of detail, but I haven't really talked about it since, I think probably talked about it when we first started talking in 2023. When we're talking about sizing urban growth areas, it is a supply and demand type scenario. There is the demand, which is the number of people we expect to come to our community, the number of households that we need. The land capacity is the supply section. How much room do you have in your urban growth area boundaries? And there is a complicated mathematical problem that goes along to it. Largely what you do, and I have a different slide here, and sorry for the mess up here on growth, but there's your entirety of your urban growth area boundary. That's your gross acreage. That's all of it.
Hey, Eric, yeah. Didn't we talk about this with the buildable lands capacity?
Yes, very much.
Isn't that tied to this?
It is almost the same thing.
Okay, thank you. It's sounding familiar, so yes. Thank you.
Basically, the difference between buildable lands and land capacity, buildable lands is looking backwards, mm-hmm. what you've achieved. Land capacity is looking forwards on what you can accommodate. A lot of the steps are the same. The assumptions sometimes are somewhat different. So you got the entirety of an urban growth area boundary. That's all your gross area, critical areas, roads, all of it. That take all of it. Then you start pulling out areas of your urban growth area, like developed land, land that is already is developed as much as you expect. You don't want to count that as capacity. Land that is unlikely to change. So that is either A, land that is just going to be unavailable. People are going to choose not to develop it, or they're perfectly happy, or they're other impediments that are just going to keep it from developing in the 20 years. You don't want to plan every piece of your acreage to develop by that 20-year mark, because that's not going to happen, and what that ends up doing is distorting your planning view. You deduct critical areas unlikely to develop. I've talked about exactly what we've done in regards to the new potential critical area regulations. We have taken the actual features on the maps. We have imposed larger buffers to show how much additional land that takes out. I have described exactly how that kind of works and why it isn't as much land as you would expect. However, we do need to pull that out. So again, we're not counting area that is not available for development. We deduct future roads and right-of-way. There are going to be roadways that are running either access roads or expanded collector and arterials. That's going to take away a certain amount of land. We deduct future public facilities. That's stormwater facilities. That's schools. That's parks, things that are going to be needed to fuel the development. And then deduct land unlikely to change. Basically what that is land that is substantially impacted by infrastructure deficiencies. We're not saying they're not going to develop, but we don't expect them to develop as fully as other areas. Number six is we deduct land unlikely to develop in the planning period. That is basically people who are going to choose not to, or a little bit of extra space to make sure that we aren't artificially limiting the supply of land. Because obviously if you plan for all of it and you get to the last 5 years, there's not going to be a lot left, and the house prices or house prices, land prices, everything are going to go up. And that leaves you with your buildable land. That's what you got left. So when you see words like gross and net, the gray area is what you would consider net developable area inside your urban growth area boundary. So you have that number, and then you take it, and step eight, you multiply it by the number of units per acre. So you assume that, okay, this zone is going to have X number of units, this zone is going to have Y number of units. And then you take that number and you apply it to the people that you expect to live in each home. The Department of Commerce has indicated over the next 20 years that Kitsap County's persons per household is going to go down over time. They look at that from a number of different perspectives, the first of which is that in general, people are having fewer children. And the other element is that people are going to be moving out of existing households. So places that used to have three or four people living in them are going to then spread out when we fix the housing problem and people can actually stop living with their parents' in their parents' basements. So ultimately that comes down to the number of people that are accommodated, and then we have to compare that number to the people that we're expecting to come. And like I mentioned before, historically, we've only talked about people. How are we going to fit the number of people? Like I expressed last time, the current preferred alternative has planned for more people than we have been allocated by the Puget Sound Regional Council, about 6,000 people more. That is due to the need to provide additional housing stock. Basically, when you have a set urban growth area boundary, that set urban growth area boundary is not that much different than your population allocation, and then you're told that what you have in there is too low density. You need to provide more density. You need to upzone a whole bunch of areas. When you do that, without shrinking the urban growth area boundaries, you are going to go over your population number, because like you'll see in the picture I've shown you so many times before, we have about 2,000 units of multifamily housing. They indicate that we need almost 8,000. So that is a threefold increase in multifamily housing, which requires massive upzoning when the growth targets are aren't necessarily that high. Oddly enough, this is how cities plan all the time. They have set boundaries, so their boundaries can't get bigger or smaller. So they have usually planned for more population, more employment, etc., so that they can ensure that as their areas of their community redevelop, they aren't creating artificial issues like not enough sewer capacity, not enough road systems, those types of things. Counties, because our urban growth areas can get bigger or smaller, and we are required to keep them as small as necessary, doesn't have that flexibility. I've been fighting that fight with the Department of Commerce, expressing that what you've given us requires us to plan for more. And they basically have said, okay. We'll see if they continue to say, okay.
So when you look at available housing, I have heard statistics around how you want to have available inventory to allow there to be movement within your housing inventory.
Yes.
So there could be some positives to over having more units than what we need.
Yes. It will provide for greater capital facilities planning. So again, we're not going to have the artificial impact of not enough sewer capacity in a line. Those are just going to go in, which is going to make the development of housing easier. However, what it all is also going to do is when you install those, someone's got to pay for them. So impact fees could go up, sewer rates could go up as you have to pay for these amenities. So it's a general balance, but yes, you are correct that it should help the housing issue, However, historically, we've always planned to that population number. And when we didn't, bad things happened. I spent a lot of time sitting in court.
Well, and I would say if we plan to it and we've always under hit that target, I mean, that's got us to where we are today,
yes.
Right?
That's exactly the case. And with the different critical areas regulations and the potential for tree canopy retention, I would have to say that single family detached housing is going to be harder than it was otherwise. But what will be easier is single family attached housing and multifamily housing. That doesn't mean that we are trying to prohibit single family detached. It just we are trying to encourage the others. And I've shown you this slide a number of times. Basically, here is the 2,000 units we have in our current zoning. We need as many as 8,300. We have tried to find the sweet spot in between having too much population overage. We are substantially closer to our multifamily housing needs. However, we are under it. But again, instead of being 8,500 people over, we're now 6,000 people over, which hopefully is showing that we are trying to thread the needle between these two competing interests. Any questions from the folks online? I haven't been looking up to see if anybody. I know you folks have heard this a number of times, but repetition and redundancy is my middle name. So this is the employment numbers. I showed you this before. We are pretty much on target, both industrial and commercial jobs. Industrial being located outside the urban growth area boundaries. Talked about critical areas plenty. I don't think I'm going to run through these slides again. There was one other thing I wanted to cover. Are we talking about Silverdale? I guess just kind of moving through the process. What you see coming before you is you'll have a public hearing, like I mentioned. Next Tuesday. You'll then get to see me the week after that for the beginnings of deliberations. We are going to be prepared to have as many questions as possible. Like I mentioned, you'll have all the comments by the public hearing. You will then obviously get additional testimony at the Planning Commission hearing. We'll then want to go to deliberations. The county will go through some of the testimony that's been received, and if there are specific elements that are actionable and supported by county staff, we may bring those forward. But ultimately, what we're going to be looking for in that October 1st deliberation is things that you would like to see changed in the goals and policies, the maps, if necessary. But again, the maps are going to be very hard to change dramatically due to the fact that we have all our capital facilities and environmental impacts attached to them. Or development regulations. I think development regulations may be where we spend a certain amount of time, especially as it applies to what should a tree canopy regulations look like, or should there be tree canopy regulations? Are we going to move forward with the CPACER program? Are we going to move forward with boundary line adjustment regulations? And then exactly what other safeguards or what other amenities should we be requiring as we have removed certain components that would require certain amenities of projects? I believe it has been brought up by one of the planning commissioners, open space outside of just landscaping. Should we have public spaces? And like I mentioned previously, we do have incentives for public spaces, but we don't have outright requirements. The energy drink is starting to come back on me.
Of course, in most change processes, the big issue is trying to get into the UGA, trying to have people on the edge to say, take me out there. Mm-hmm. And what I've heard before from staff is that, hey, we are going to be looking at some of these things that are more isolated, the areas between Kingston and Paulsbo. We're looking with a Y and that in 2025. Is that going to be the same look for people who may want to come in on the edges? Or How do we answer it? I expect we're going to have testimony along the lines, hey, you've got a problem on low-income housing. Here's what I'll do. Bring me into the UGA. I'll do a development agreement, and we'll agree to provide low-income housing, helping solve that problem. And it says one of the answers, oh, no, you, if you want to do that, wait till 2025, do the development agreement first, and then we'll look at what would have been called a rezone if staff agrees that matches up with our goals.
I wouldn't expect that necessarily in 2025, but I could see opportunities in 2026. Board of County Commissioners for 2025, and so far they have not come to a firm conclusion, are focused on rural issues, but predominantly agriculture, transfer development rights, water resources, and again, the rural-to-rural reclassification request highlighted by the Rainier request, right. That one you mentioned between Polesbo. But for other folks who want to get into the urban growth area boundary, they are likely going to have to either A, get all their ducks in a row for 2026, or significantly campaign the board to think about some of these other opportunities in 2025. But between focusing on Silverdale and making sure that we have a robust urban center plan and talking about rural, which is largely all the issues I just talked about, there may not be a lot of additional staff capacity for Colin, Jim, Heather, and Kathleen, and Scott. Oh, my. So after the meeting on the 1st, we'll then come back on the 15th for any remaining deliberations. Hopefully, if the deliberations on the 1st go well, we'd be able to establish a change matrix. Generally, the way these work is that you would take the existing documents, put them up for consideration, and then say, here's how I want to change them, recommend changing them as a planning commission. We go through the potential changes. You folks say yes, you say no, and then that is the document that is memorialized in the findings of fact, and move on to the Board of County Commissioners for their public hearing. That is October 28th. So things will be moving quite fast starting today.
This is hearing. Hearing examiner doesn't have a role. We're talking about that.
Yep, you are correct. Okay. That is a Board of County Commissioner hearing.
Okay. That one scared me.
Nope. We're going to change that right now. I apologize. I was told that my past PowerPoint presentations were ugly. So I have this is actually the new template. So I apologize that I have not necessarily truthed the move to the new template. It is much more attractive, I will say, but still, I think we should have a moment of silence for the old green background and yellow text. Thank you very much. Any other questions about moving forward? Again, I'm just pretty much going to stop. Are there other things that you would like us to bring? We have the case study for the CPACER program. I think I've answered some of the questions that have been posed here, but are there particular additional add-ons beyond my dissertation I provided? Verbal dissertation. Okay. I think I've hit on what all the main topics will be. You've heard them during the hearings in April. A lot of those will come back. There's going to be folks who are going to be concerned about the developability of our existing urban growth areas. There are going to be people who are concerned about inadequate environmental protection of our urban growth areas. There are going to be folks who are concerned about the lack of housing that is currently available, and there are going to be people who are concerned about the impacts of additional housing. So that is going to put all of us in that delightful balancing position where we are looking to find how we can accommodate all those interests to hopefully provide a successful future for Kitsap County. So thank you very much for your service, because it's going to be fun.
Any other comments? How do we achieve success? How do we just can't put a 20-year plan out there without having periodic looks and some overlook monitoring to,
yes.
What's the plan for that?
The plan is for us to expand our monitoring, not just on environmental features, which you heard throughout the critical areas ordinance, but also on housing. The Department of Commerce is going to require a 5-year review of our housing efforts. So obviously we're looking to create a fertile ground. Come 5 years from now, they're going to see, okay, what grew here. So through that we are going to look at annual monitoring of our housing stock. We have new dashboards that are being developed by the Geographic Information System team that basically shows what type of housing is going in, what type of densities are going in, so that not just planners, but the public can see how that is working. So we can actually see how we are advancing forward. However, like I've said for the last 20 years, we are a very big ship. We have been moving a certain direction for a good length of time at a particular speed. Turning is challenging. So it's a big ship. We are turning, but it is going to take time. So progress is a journey, not a destination. So the important part for our monitoring is not going to be seeing, okay, did we reach where we wanted to be? It is going to be, are we heading the right direction, or are we starting to move back to our old ways, which has not gotten us necessarily where we're looking for certain components of our community. I think there are probably members of the community that are perfectly fine with how things are today. Very, very interested in the existing development pattern, very interested in the existing traffic patterns. However, the secret's out. Kitsap County is a very attractive place to live for retirees, for folks coming from other parts of the country, and people coming from the other side of the water. We need to plan for them. Not planning for them is not really an option. And with that, I'll stop my sermon.
I have a comment, Alan.
Yes, sir.
I would like the county to adopt criteria for mandatory area designated as open space to be allocated in multifamily developments. And we all should define what exactly is open space and usable open space. Do I need to put this in the form of a motion, or can you just...
In general, this is just kind of an open-ended direction right now for us to include that in the various conversations. I guess for a little additional clarity, are you looking for established percentages?
Yes.
Okay. You're looking for objective standards versus subjective standards.
Well, I see none presently. So, yes.
So any is better than none.
Yes.
Yeah, objective standards are one of those things that we have kind of a love-hate relationship with. We want to have them to provide predictability for development coming in, but then due to site constraints, development proposals, you end up not being able to hit the objective number, and instead you end up killing a good project because it can't hit 10%, it can hit 9.5. So then we tend to trend to subjective standards, and then people are concerned, well, I don't know exactly what that means. Some projects have none. Some projects have a ton, so we kind of do that delicate balance. But it's that type of information that's helpful for staff to know what we should be bringing back to you on the 1st and 15th after the public hearing.
So I have a question related to that. If we as a county think that's a good idea for open space percentages, how do we work in partnership with the jurisdictions that are also developing their comprehensive plans to keep this, maybe these good ideas in their back pocket as well?
We each review each other's comprehensive plans as they come out. So I've reviewed the documents from Port Orchard, Bremerton, the other entities. One thing that it will be important, we had this concept back in the day called urban growth area management agreements, where urban growth areas where we planned specifically between the associated city and the county and made sure that our regulations and our development patterns were as close to one another as possible. That best example of that is Poulsbo. It has a very small urban growth area boundary. However, we utilize their code in our UGA. So we're using their standards. Development looks just like it when annexation occurs. We are looking at potentially updating that interlocal agreement to also have the city of Poulsbo administer those permits, because it's hard for our planners to be experts on our code and their code. It would be great if we could develop those types of agreements with Bremerton and Port Orchard in particular, so that as development comes in, it'll make it easier for annexation to occur, because people, it'll be more seamless. You don't have, in certain parts of, say, East Bremerton, there are parts that we control and parts that the city controls. When we go out to plow roadways, we stop at the county line. So you have plowed roads, no plowed roads, plowed roads. So it's that type of coordination that is particularly important, not just when we're doing the full comprehensive plan, but as we move forward and we start talking with each jurisdiction about how we're going to facilitate annexation and how we are going to make sure that the development regulations are as close to each other as possible for clarity for the public, staff, and the development community.
Who's looking at housing affordability? I drive down McWilliams and I see these duplexes that are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been approved and they're building. Who's looking at affordability on these things and affordability stock?
That will be one of the most challenging components of our housing challenge. The question will be for the county is what's its role and what's its responsibility? Our role is somewhat small in the housing situation. We want to make sure that our responsibility remains there. We want to do our part, but we don't want to be responsible for now controlling how much homes cost. I think at that point, there are certain members of the community are going to feel that's government way overreaching. Obviously, we handle it through public housing authorities and nonprofits to provide true affordable housing that is oftentimes subsidized. But I think what you're getting at is homes that are cheaper than they are, new homes that are cheaper than they are today. Who's going to be looking to see that that's actually happening? And that goes back to the monitoring that I was talking about. As housing is going on, we are going to take a look and see how many townhomes are being built, how many duplexes are being built, and then we're going to take a look and try to see what the sales prices of those are. Obviously, the next step that we could do in our five-year update, anyone who just heard half of what I just said, that's not today, would be we could have requirements for apartment complexes to have a certain number of one-bedroom unit studio apartments. We could establish caps on the size of homes that can be developed in single-family construction. That is a step beyond where we are today. It's not a step that's being currently required. And would be the type of thing that would have to be taken on very, very carefully, as, again, our role is zoning. Our role is not quite as much social engineering as I think that would create. However, I could be wrong, and we'll find out as we move forward, and we have new commissioners and new legislators who likely will be passing new legislation between now and that five-year look back on what we should be doing when it comes to local planning.
Where do we discuss this?
It's
not in any of the comp plan now.
So there is a whole section on housing and homelessness and human services that looks at affordability based on average income versus cost of building. It's a sticky topic, and there's already divisions that are dedicated to it. It's what does affordability mean? Is it the cost of the house, or is it looking at the average citizen in Kitsap County, the average income is $50,000, and what can they afford to buy? Like, what does affordability mean?
Yeah, and that's why we have talked very carefully. When we mean affordable housing, we're largely talking about housing authorities and nonprofits and subsidized housing. When we're talking about housing affordability, we're talking about pretty much the entirety of the housing stock that is not necessarily subsidized. And what the county can do is the county can incentivize different housing stock that is different than what we currently have on the market that, in general, I say in general because real estate is location, 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 in general is cheaper to rent and cheaper to own. And the more of that we have, the more opportunities we're creating for people, not necessarily making $50,000 a year, but people who are making $100,000 a year to be able to afford to think about buying a home if they can get that down payment in their bank account.
Any other comments tonight? Well, I think thank you very much for your discussion.
Well, again, I appreciate the Planning Commission hearing me go on and on like this for as often as you have. If, again, anything comes up that you think, well, I'd really like to know about blank, I can either, A, include it in the presentation, which, again, I promise I will try to keep short because there may be a good number of testifiers coming next week, or I can have it available for deliberation. So with that, I want to thank you guys very much for your evening.
Which brings us to the second public participation, public comments. Do we have any? Looks like we have a Mr. Mike Garrett.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I just had a question on the final environmental impact statement. It just doesn't smell like a final anything. It doesn't remind me of an environmental impact statement. It's a bunch of questions, and it's got all the different options and the comments. And when are we going to get a final environmental impact statement?
There are two different types of environmental impact statements, the first of which are the ones that you would see for an individual project. That's called a project-level environmental impact statement. That is very specific. When it talks about environmental features, it talks about specific boundaries of wetlands, particular stream buffers, etc. It talks about lot sizes and distributions. It's very specific and gets down to the key components of each one, how much water discharge is going into this stream versus that stream. What the final environmental impact statement that you see is at what's called a planning level. That is a 30,000-foot level where it doesn't look at a specific project. It looks at an average-type project that you would see in a particular zone. It also looks at what's already been developed and looks for new significant adverse impacts. So it doesn't look at all the impacts. It looks at ones that are significant and adverse based on new development from the proposals you're making. So what you see in the document is, again, what is traditionally provided at a planning level. We do provide that list of mitigation efforts. Many of those are located in the goals and policies or in the development regulations already. However, it also does indicate, especially when we're talking about greenhouse gas emissions, when we're talking about vehicle miles traveled, it provides a series of mitigation options that we need to continue to work on over time, such as transit, such as non-motorized facilities, such as improving the construction of our built environment. We have had some comments. I'm not absolutely certain. I think everyone's looking at the project level of detail. This is not at that. I will say that the final environmental impact statement that you see here today actually includes more information than we have put in prior final environmental impact statements for the 2016, 12, and 06 comprehensive plans.
Yeah, thanks. I did have, there's a lot of comments from Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, from the DOT, from this all different groups, the tribes, and have those been included in here for a purpose?
We have considered all of them. Many of those comments actually run kind of contrary to one another, where one's looking to go one direction, one's looking to go the other direction. When it comes to state agencies, we've addressed their comments. We've met with them closely. When we've talked to the tribes, we have accommodated a lot of the tribal interests. I won't say that we've accommodated all of them, as, again, we are trying to balance protection of the environment with ensuring that we have adequate land for housing, jobs, et cetera. We have read, considered, and included in the analysis and the documentation all the comment that we've received to date, which is more than 150 comments. Okay. However, I guess I will say balancing of comments is in the eye of the beholder, and we 100% understand that.
Correct. All right, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Garrett, could I ask what area do you live in?
North Kitsap.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other comments? Any comments for the good of the order? Hearing none. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.